How do you grieve an impossible loss? How does a family torn apart by an act of hate learn to forgive and to heal? 4 years ago, that act of extreme hate, an act of terror committed by a white supremacist, ripped apart New Zealand's Muslim community. Two Christchurch mosques were attacked during Friday prayers in one of the worst mass shootings in modern history, leaving 51 worshippers dead, dozens injured, and a country struggling to make sense of it all. Brenton Tarrant, the 28-year-old Australian man who had live-streamed his attack and published a hateful, conspiracy-filled manifesto, was sentenced to life imprisonment without parole. It was the first time that sentence had ever been passed by a New Zealand court. At the sentencing, the families and survivors were present, reading out powerful and heartbreaking personal statements addressing Tarrant directly.
The heart is broken because we are not broken.
You think that your action have destroyed our community?
You transgressed and you thought you can break us. You failed miserably.
I'm strong. And you made me even stronger.
I'm a strong, stubborn Turkish man who has been brought up to battle long.
Whatever punishment you are going to receive in this world will never be enough.
Today you are called terrorist, and you proved that to the world that I was not, and us as a Muslim were not terrorists.
I've turned to God, and that's made my faith in Islam even stronger.
So you have failed completely. So you have failed completely.
Welcome to The Big Picture, a show about the past, the present, and the future. My name is Muhammad Hassan, and today we are speaking to Aya Al-Omari, who you just heard speaking at the sentencing. Aya lost her brother Hussein on March 15, 2019. She has since been fighting to keep his story alive, a story of bravery and heroism. I sat down to speak to her about why that fight is so important and how she and her family have dealt with the unimaginable grief that followed his loss. Aya Al-Omari, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to give you a space in the beginning to just kind of talk about yourself. Your family has moved recently, but how long were they living in Christchurch?
So me and my brother were born in Emirates. We immigrated to Christchurch in 1997. Mm. So my family, actually my mom, because my dad stayed in Emirates. Me, my mom, and my brother, we immigrated in 1997, and then my dad joined us 10 years ago. In March this year, 2022, is when we moved to Auckland. But I've been between Christchurch, Wellington.
You know, my family moved to New Zealand in 1997 as well.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of families, a lot of Arab
in
families.
In the 97 specifically. 97. Yeah, you're right, actually.
So I always wonder what happened in that year, that there was like this big immigration push. Or maybe they were advertising New Zealand for the
that's
first time.
True. And well, actually, I do know that my dad did apply for all like Australia, Canada, UK, and New Zealand. And I must ask.
Just like a process of elimination.
I must ask what happened. Yeah. Yeah.
And tell me about your parents.
Yeah. So my mom is a calligraphist.
A world-renowned.
That's the word I was looking for. Yeah. A world-renowned calligraphist. She is, mashallah, she's very talented. She's ambidextrous. She can write in both hands. And yeah, she got her sort of, because in calligraphy, you get the certification handed to you by someone who's certified.
Yes.
And she got handed that certification when she was a child.
And you can't get it in any other way.
No.
You have to study under somebody
who has mastered
the craft, and then they gift you this mastery.
Yeah.
And then you can also give it to somebody
else,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So my mom actually, if I'm not mistaken, she has two or three. Hmm. But the first one was when she was a child.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what was that like growing up? I mean, were you aware of the fact that your mom was this really important person?
I mean, she because you grow up with it, you don't know any different. So, but she is really, I think she taught by me being in the presence of her, like, exhibitions or her media interviews, her, you know, like, every country in the Middle East you go to, she would be asked to do some interview and we'd be running around, the children in the background. But she has this very prestigious presence to her that, as a child, was indeed very inspiring.
Almost like a diplomat, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, that carried through till now. Yeah.
And what about your father?
My dad, he's he worked in the petroleum industry for the last, since the 80s, basically. And, he moved, unfortunately, in New Zealand, there isn't that field of petroleum quite as much as there is in the Middle East. And
fortunately,
so,
or unfortunately,
I don't know. So he worked in the Emirates, and he was our provider up until about 10 years ago when he left Emirates and joined us here.
I want to ask you to talk about your brother.
You,
what's the age difference between the two of you?
So Hussein was born in 10th of January. I was born in the 11th of January. And there's 2 years difference. He's older to me by 2 years. And that's the heartbreaking question, isn't it? That in 15th March 2019 on Friday was the last time that I heard from my brother. Well, actually 14th of March, so the day before. So on the 15th of March is when the terrorist attack happened. And the 15th of March is when Hussein joined heaven.
And you both were born in the Emirates and you grew up here together and mostly in Christchurch?
We shared childhood of Emirates. Always things that, you know, reminds us of Emirates we'd always talk about, or we have that, you know, siblings connection. And he's my only sibling. And I lost that sibling connection in 2019. And he stayed in Christchurch, but I went on to study when I was 18. I went on to study in Wellington, and then 5 years before his death, or murder, shall I say, I moved to Christchurch because I missed family. I missed the family. I was enjoying Wellington. I really liked Wellington. I even told my family, come to Wellington. But, you know, it was hard at the time for us to move, and so I joined, and I am so thankful that I did, because I got to spend that last 5 years with my brother.
And what was Hussein doing in Christchurch? What was he working as? What was he kind of keeping himself busy with?
So Hussein is a very bubbly, extrovert type of person. He would go into a room, light up the life out of that room. And so his field, which I thought was really, really fit for Hussein, is the tourism field.
Wow.
So so that's what he studied. And so he worked in the tourism industry. And the last job that he had, he was very uncomfortable with the role because of elements of racism in the role. And so he left that job. And so that is why he was present on Friday. Otherwise, he would have been at work on that Friday. But, you know, Hussein is very he's very devoted to his culture, his religion as well. And so, and also the masjid is a place where you can actually, you do your prayer and you also connect with people a lot there. And Hussein loved that element of connecting with people. After 15th of March, I hear stories about Hussein that I'm like, is this my brother? I'm just blown away by how many lives he has touched, from the young to the old. Blown away.
Like what? Can you give us an example?
This person who studied with him, she was going through a life crisis, a suicidal thoughts in life. And Hussein, she came to me and she had recognized me and saying, you know, Hussein saved my life. If it wasn't for Hussein, I wouldn't be here today. And honestly, this, like, she was talking to the support that he gave, just making a cup of tea or texting, are you okay, or thinking of you, or, you know, things like that. And that is a true testament to how Hussein lived his life, because to his very last day, he looked after people above himself.
Mm.
He really, really looked after people above himself. And also another story which really, really touched my heart is on the 14th of March, Hussein used to go to this local pizza shop and he had just done his groceries. And in closing time, he gave the person who made his pizza a chocolate bar from his groceries and said, thank you for making me really nice pizzas.
Hmm.
I'll see you later. And the guy said, I'll see you later. And that was 14th of March, the day before.
And these were the kind of stories that you started finding out about?
After. After. I mean, it's a small gesture, but it's the appreciation of people that he valued that connection a lot. Yeah.
Do you feel like you're collecting these moments from him that maybe you hadn't known about before, that you're getting exposed to now, that you're getting a chance to see these moments from him?
I think, like, I always knew this about Hussein, but the abundance of these stories is just too overwhelming for me sometimes to comprehend. Wow, this was my big brother, you know, like, it's, I knew this about Hussein. It's, you know, from since childhood, he would look after me as well. And that trait extended not to just me, but to his circle as well.
And we've heard you talk as well about the heroism that your brother displayed, not only in his life and some of those moments that you described, but on the day of March 15. What can you share about that?
So what I can share with you, I'll tell you another story, which kind of set precedent to what I'm about to tell you. So when we, in the 90s, when we were traveling to Emirates to see my dad, we hired an Armaguard, which is a security company, and to check the house. So they have the keys and check the house. So this is the story told by my brother. So the night before our departure, he was on the internet downloading some music to listen to on the plane really late at night, and he hears these footsteps and keys, and the keys go into the door and our door opens. And so Hussein jumps into this person and pins him to the wall and says, who are you? And the guy was like, I'm a guard, who are you? And then after that kerfuffle, they have a laugh because the armor guard guy got the date wrong. And so basically he came a day early.
Yeah.
So putting that aside, on the day of the 15th of March, I went to, so after finding out, after going to, my parents went to his to the masjid, the mosque. I went to his house, and then he wasn't present in either. So we met in hospital. I stayed in hospital till odd hours of the morning. In hospital, I kept hearing stories about Hussein, about how he was yelling towards the direction of the terrorist, about how he was saying, get out, get out. And I had texted my friend at the time and I said, I know for a fact that Hussein wouldn't have sat still. he would have done something. And they were telling me, you know what, like, because they were in the hospital, they were going through a list of names. And so a big majority of them were listed on the first and second day. But as the names go by, as my theory was correct, we didn't hear, of his, he wasn't officially identified until 6 days later, but we started grieving 2 days later. We knew. We knew he was no longer with us. We knew what he had done. And with all these people that across time, we kept hearing the same story again and again, that Hussein actually stood up towards where the shooting was coming from. And so over the last 3 years, we tried to actually verify that. The only way for us to verify that is to see the footage inside the mosque. So I do have a court order that allows me to see that footage inside the mosque. I can't exactly tell you what I saw, but I can tell you that I am so, so proud of my brother. And one day I will tell his story.
Yeah.
Really proud of my brother. Yeah.
I mean, from everything that you've described, from those stories that you shared, he seems like quite a proud, fearless person.
Really, really fearless. Yeah, he is. I have no word. Even if I wanted to put it in words, I have no words to explain what I saw. But it's absolutely amazing. And I am so proud to be his little sister. Yeah.
What is it that you want people to know, to remember about who Hussein was?
Hussein was, I think the trait that he really illustrates is that he has a really strong sense of family, community. Because if he didn't love his family or his community as much as he did, he wouldn't have done what he had done. He wouldn't be this, he wouldn't have gone out of his way to make sure we are okay, his community is okay. He would not have done that. And if there are more people in the world like Hussein, I wouldn't be talking to you right now saying this is what happened. And I think we're in a time in the world where all we care about is materialistic things, you know, how much money I can earn and this and that. This comes and goes. But your time in life will go. And so you make the most out of it by connecting with your community and family and not being an individualistic person. Because that's what we become so enclosed in our own little bubble that we're like, okay, this is for me, this benefits me, and this is what I'm going to do. Doesn't matter what everyone else thinks. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah. That's what Hussein was about, and he taught me a lot. Even after his passing, he taught me a lot as well. Mm. I don't care as much about how much I earn, but I care more about what I do and how I do it. And so, like, after that, and Hussein inspired me as well. Hey, I started volunteering at the mosque security. Never in a million years
would I. You were the mosque security?
Yeah.
Wow.
I actually, like, what made me stronger as well is I signed up for a self-defense class, martial arts self-defense class. And when you go through grief, and I've heard this before, but I never did I imagine I would be the one going through this. So people who do boxing or martial arts or have a story behind it, and honestly, it really helped boost my self-confidence 1,000,000% above. Not only that, but every time that I do the martial arts, I think of my brother, because I know he would have absolutely, it's not something we would have explored, but I know if he was with me, he would have absolutely loved to have done that with me and be the person I can, you know, practice on. But, but you know, I mean, God took Hussein for a reason and he left me back for a reason. And I believe that I am trying at the moment to tell my story and in hoping that this will ripple to, even if it was one person, then that's it done.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you something that might be a difficult question, but to go from what you were saying about, you know, taking up martial arts and self-defense and that being a kind of coping mechanism for grief.
Hmm.
Can you talk about that process, that grieving process, and what it looks like and how it evolves over time?
Initially, I mean, grief, it is unfortunate that I actually, being in my position, I saw the grief journey of a lot of families. So I can see people either, you go through self-destruct mode, or you go out and seek help, or the journey is different, is really different for everyone. And it's unfortunate that we got to see a lot in a short space of time with the amount of people that we came to know from the affected families. But for me personally, I know I'm the type of person who can really pack their emotions in a box, put them aside, and deal with it later. And so at the outset of the attacks, there was a lot to do. And like, in terms of, okay, what support system is available to us? What is the police saying? What is the funeral home, the victim support, the court? There were so many agencies involved and so many information that somebody had to absorb. And so I took that responsibility for my mom and dad. Mm. And things like when the police would come and do the... before Hussein was identified, they had to do, the DNA tests. And so I had to take them to his house and get some samples, sign off on documents, his bank accounts. There was so many elements that you're not prepared for that just suddenly comes all at once to you. And the magnitude of what happened, the shock of what happened, you're still trying to process this. So there's all these elements. It's something that suddenly happened. And so it's not like you're dying of old age and so you kind of wind up all your finances or things. You're not prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, and I surprised myself on how I managed to do that, is pack myself up, deal with it later. And so the only time initially cried was, I hadn't grieved Hussein yet, but the first time that I cried was when I had to pick up the phone. I was the one in hospital and tell my mom and dad, it's confirmed, Hussein is no longer with us. My phone felt so heavy. Try and call your parents and tell them your son is no longer with us. That was the hardest moment of my entire life, on par with losing Hussein, but that moment is what made me cry. Then I packed my emotions on the side, and then I think, and I still, it's a long journey, but I think the way or the time that I actually grieved Hussein is when the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia sponsored the families to go to pilgrimage, to go to Hajj. And so at the time, my mom couldn't join me, so I went solo. And
had you been before?
No. Oh, I've been to Saudi before. I've been to Umrah, which is the
smaller Hajj.
The smaller version of Hajj, you know. But it was with me and Hussein. That was the last time. And we were kids, and so I have zero collection of what it was like. But going there, and so to do Hajj, you can also do Umrah. And so I did Umrah for Hussein. And that Umrah, that is, I think, when I healed. That is, not healed, but sort of opened myself up to feelings, which is a new concept to me because I didn't know that I had, I was almost worried that I had no feelings. I was told by the victim support person is actually having no feelings is a feeling in itself as well. And so it's okay. It's okay not to be okay. And it was at that time is when I recognized that, hey, you know, stop bottling things up. You need to open up, do this journey for Hussein. And also what helped as well is when talking to people in Saudi Arabia, when they came to know my story, the one thing that really stood out to me is people telling me Kulna Hussein, which means we are all Hussein, which means we are all your brothers. That, honestly, it's one word, but it makes such a big difference to someone as well. And so whether you are grieving or talking to someone grieving, know that these little things make a huge, huge difference in someone's life, literally in someone's life. I carried that word, Kulna Hussein, with me to this day. Everybody's my brother. It was amazing. It was just amazing. And so that was the time. That was the time that I opened up my feelings. And so I recognized that I need to actually channel my grief somewhere. And so when I came back, that's when I signed up for self-defense. I thought, you know what? That's something Hussein would have loved to do. It is really, really out of my comfort zone. I'm an introvert. I'm an extreme introvert at the time. But then doing that kind of pushed me outside my comfort zone, and exploring these new things really, really helped my journey. Having a good instructor, everybody around you as well. And again, when they come to know your story as well, the support system is there. But
I wanted to mention something that you reminded me of when you were talking about the reaction from some people that you had when you were in Saudi Arabia. And it's this feeling that I have gotten and a lot of conversations that I've had with people outside of New Zealand. And specifically, I mean, everybody at the time really had an awareness that something fundamentally tragic had happened in Christchurch. But for Muslims, I mean, I haven't come across a single Muslim anywhere in the world that didn't feel in some ways personally connected to it. And given how many Muslims there are around the world and how much attention they specifically, that sector of the world has given to Christchurch and to trying to understand what happened and to trying to understand and maybe get to know some of the people that were affected. Did you feel that? Did you feel this kind of attention that there was on your community and on your family?
Yes, absolutely. It is unfortunate that the reason why it got so much attention is because it was a white supremacist against the Muslim community in a place far, far away, New Zealand. you hear these happening in the Middle East a lot, but it doesn't gain as much traction as what happened. It's because it's become part of daily life. It's become routine. And so this was, I hope that everything gets the attention that it deserves, but this is the reason why this attack in New Zealand got the worldwide attention. The way our Prime Minister reacted towards us as well gained worldwide attention, and we did feel wrapped around from New Zealand and from around the world. I remember in the, was it the first or the second week after what happened, they held a memorial in Hagley Park, which is across the road from the masjid, from the mosque. And I was sitting in the front and I looked back at the sea of people, and just by being there, I felt supported. And in my travels as well, when people come to know, people know about this instance because it made such a worldwide impact. So yes, I do feel it. And most recently, when I went overseas as well, it's still there. However, as time passes, people think, yep, there's, you know, it's all gone. Mm. They're all sorted. But it's not. There is a lot going on in the background. The derivatives of this is so much more than what happened on the day. Mm. There's so many elements involved. There's so many actions. There's so many wheels in motion that are happening in the background that it's exhausting.
Yeah.
It's really exhausting. And so,
what's the most important part of telling Hussein's story for you? I mean, this is a lot of effort. It's a lot of fighting. It's a lot of questions and chasing. And what is driving you to do this?
What is driving me? I think my parents is a, even though they didn't say it, but it's implied that I'm not just doing this for my brother, but I'm doing it for my parents as well. My parents are so, so strong, unbelievably strong. Even my mom in court, she forgave the killer. It's a lot to unpack here, but by doing so, she is not forgetting, she's forgiving, because that removes the burden off her shoulder and the rest is up to God. Mm. And in that action, her, I can see, you know how I mentioned earlier about people's different grief stories. My mom doesn't have any anger. She doesn't have any hate. And this is exactly what she said on the spot. She said, I don't have any hate in me. I don't have any anger in me. I forgive you. And that's it, because Hussein is, we believe that he is in heaven at the moment. He won paradise. He won it. And so it's only a matter of us being patient till we join him in the afterlife. But until then, the Hussein's story is a big factor in closing that chapter, or opening a new chapter rather. And by me cementing his story in an official manner is going to tremendously not only help my parents, but it will also help me, and I hope will help others as well.
Can you see a finish line in front of you when that moment will come, when you are out to kind of, you know, begin to move on with your life?
There, I think the finish line to the getting all the questions answered to the terrorist attack is, and I hope I'm wrong, but I see it years away. But I think I'm going to have to draw that line for myself. Once I get what I need to complete Hussein's story and tell Hussein's story, this is when I can look back and relax and keep moving forward. Yeah, keep moving forward.
honor of being Hussein's mother before he was cruelly taken from me. He didn't have an enemy in the world until the day he was killed. He used to give me flowers for my birthday, but instead I got his body. I decided to forgive you, Mr. Tarrant, because I don't have hate. I don't have revenge. And in our Muslim faith, we say, Al-afu inda al-maqdira. It means that if we are able to forgive, forgive. I forgive you. Damage was done, and Hussein will never be here. So I have only one choice, is to forgive you.
The Big Picture podcast is presented by me, Muhammad Hassan, with production from Huda Jawadi, recording from Hussein Sarhan, and graphics from Anas Ala. And we'll see you next time.